FAM Radio Network.
When I change my rhythm and my rhyme in my speech, you'll see that you do change the way you listen to me. It's a kind of rhythm and a kind of rap, but nevertheless, a different part of the brain, it does tap. But when I slow down and I'm not as articulate, you know the result.
Those that have trouble moving freely and in their proprioceptive system helps them move better. And, you know, can different types of music, and it's apparent that it does, can they be used as tools in children's lives and our own lives to help us study better, move better?
Welcome to Music and Learning. I am Marianne Harmon.
Welcome, Don, and thank you, Annalisa, for joining us. Well, your book, The Mozart Effect, received a lot of publicity. Tell us why you wrote it.
Well, I wrote it long ago, about 1995 and 96. And one of the reasons was to let the world know about Tomatis, about listening, about the real pioneering effects, not only what had been found in a clinical or therapeutic context with music, but what the emerging trends were that were just on the crest of finding public interest. And since those 15 years have passed, now I'm doing a completely new project that I have been working at for over a year called Healing at the Speed of Sound. And it is all based on research and what's been applied in about the last 10 years.
Well, the book generated some controversy also as to whether you were saying listening to Mozart makes you smarter. And some people got really just caught up on that and missed some of the more important points. So can you clarify that for our listeners?
Sure. I think that was one of the catchphrases. I'm not sure that I said it exactly that way. But what we do know is that listening to certain forms of music help organize our time-space awareness of what's around us. And that for many students, very organized music, not highly rhythmic and not highly emotional, and music without text and words serves a purpose for the brain to kind of format itself. There are many, many kinds of effective and excellent styles of music that all have positive effects. I think the core of this work is learning how each of us listens, how we are aware of our environment that we live in, that we work in, that we study in, and literally learn how to make some good choices for the diet of sound and music that we use in our daily life.
So people should understand that Mozart has many benefits, but all styles of music benefit us. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes, and there are certain types of music that affect the brain in different ways. Highly rhythmic music talks to our body. We hear certain kinds of rhythms or drum beats, and we want to get up and we want to move to it. Other music that is very ambient and sounds that are very extensive and slow gives us a bigger spatial sense of what's around us. For instance, if you get on the subway in New York City, you can almost tell what kind of music each of the people are listening to. Is their foot tapping? Or are they zoning out? Or are they swinging and singing along to the music? In other words, some of it is like a sonic caffeine and others like a sonic sedative. And learning how we choose different kinds of music, Mozart has been a fantastic model. I come to this field through the ears and the professional life as a classical musician, and I find that Mozart may not be the most favorite of everyone on the planet's music, but it's also very, very digestible. And he used a couple of forms, the sonata allegro form, the variation form, the rondo form, that has a structure in time and space that allows a listener, whether it's just passive in the background, but to feel organized. You hear the same melody that occurs sooner than later, and it's not music that is very highly emotional. In other words, when you get to Beethoven, he just rips your heart out with beauty and anger and stress and phenomenal genius. But he had mood changes. And romantic music can be very, very moody, you know, with a high contrast of emotions. And there's just something about Mozart. And Dr. Alfred Tomatis was the man who first began using Mozart's music to help stabilize communication with kids who do not speak well, or they're unable to stay focused, or early forms of autism in the 1950s and 60s and 70s, he was finding that it brought a certain stability. Those are large generalizations now, and we also know much more about it than we did in those years, about how auditory tracking and how the ear and the vestibular system all make a big impression on how we make our choices for communication and for movement.
And that's a good thing. Annalisa, I'd love for you to add something here.
What I think is really happening here is the universal principle is that music organizes the brain. And if we can show parents, and you know, and they can do it from their own lives. You know, there's a certain type of music you may want to play while you're, you know, working out versus when you want to be calm. And to give, show parents how that works for children. Is there are certain kinds of music that helps them organize the brain that allows them to communicate better? Or to those that have trouble moving freely and in their proprioceptive system, helps them move better? And, you know, can different types of music, and it's apparent that it does, can they be used as tools in children's lives and our own lives to help us, you know, study better, move better, you know?
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. I had a book come out after Mozart Effect called The Mozart Effect for Children that goes from prenatal all the way to about age 10. And it talks about how the different parts of the brain and the auditory vestibular system are stimulated at different ages in regard to language and to movement and coordination and to ability to track the eye. And that book is just loaded. All of these are described on my website, mozarteffect.com. And three of the albums I did for children, the first one was Strengthen the Mind. Well, it has a lot more right ear stimulation. It has higher frequency. The tempo is not really fast, but it's chipper. It's awakening. It's the second album is called Relax, Daydream, and Draw. Well, this is something that we don't use as much high frequency. The harmonic rhythm is a bit slower. We find that as we build an hour of music listening or 40 minutes of music in the background as children are doing different activities like drawing or reading, that it reaches a peak and then it relaxes. And it's not just one piece over another piece.
Okay. Annalisa, how do you see this working with the children that you work with?
Well, you know, it's not just about put some music on and, you know, watch your kids get smarter.
No, that doesn't work.
And I think, you know, people have sometimes pulled that out of this research. It's all about the integration into whole child development. It's all about what you do with it. It's all about the movement and the singing and the playing of instruments and being part of the rhythm. But it's one of those things, if it's understood well, and, you know, what music to choose when you're trying to work on this activity, how it integrates together. We see, you know, huge developmental changes in these kids, and they feel successful in there, and they understand concepts, and they move along faster when they're an active, they and their parents are an active part of this process rather than music being passive. So
yes, but then on the clinical aspect of it, there are methods like Tomatis and this wonderful work by Advanced Brain Technology, where the sound is put not only through headphones, it is into the skull in bone conduction. And the results of what 30 hours of listening to music over a period of 60 days does for language and coordination. And that's a very, very different context of using auditory stimulation to improve. You can look on the web for Advanced Brain Technology or ABT, and you will find that there is a whole another venue of using sounds that are not just passive in the background or active for movement and learning, but it is using the components of sound to stimulate the manner in which the ear, and especially the middle ear, coordinates the sound. It's a lot more sophisticated and interesting than just choice in the background. A lot of kids who are hypersensitive to sound, they can't pay attention because every sound in passing, they gravitate toward. And so learning to filter out sound is just as important for the ear to learn how to do than it is to put things in the background. I never advocate music all the time in the background. It's like a wallpaper. And yet, using music as what we call trigger effects, coming into the room, working together, reading very lightly, or, you know, just times of day, time to line up. You know, kids do it automatically with their raps and their songs.
Don, could you just then give us, to close, your best piece of advice you could leave for everyone who'd like to make music a part of their life, but don't know quite how?
To enjoy quiet, learn how to be very selective in that, just know the world around you, and don't listen to music that is ultra too loud for too long because you can damage your ear. Music is an art. That's the most wonderful thing about it.
This is a wonderful interview, and I wish we could have more time with you. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Music and Learning with Marianne Harmon. Thanks for listening.
This program is produced by Jack Street Media as part of the Affiliate Nanocasting Network. Thanks for listening.